Watch out for overheating. Your partner shouldn't overdress and she should keep her workouts moderate. Remind her to take plenty of breaks and drink lots of water before, during, and after the workout. Hot tubs, steam baths, saunas, as relaxing as they are, can also be dangerous. During the first 6 to 8 weeks of the pregnancy, it's best to stay away from anything that could raise your partner's body temperature above 102 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about 39 degrees centigrade. To cool itself, the body moves blood away from the internal organs, including the uterus and the fetus that's inhabiting it, and out toward the skin. After 8 weeks, she should be okay, but even then, if she does want to slip into the hot tub, have her doctor sign off on it and make sure she drinks plenty of water. One final word of advice on exercise. Do not panic if your partner did any of these things before you found out she was pregnant. First of all, there's nothing you can do about it now, and torturing yourselves won't undo it. Second, the chances are slim that anything she did will have an impact on the baby in any significant way. Just be careful from here on out. Nutrition. Once upon a time, there were the four basic food groups. Then they changed their name to the Food Guide Pyramid, then My Pyramid, then My Plate. Whatever they're called, the principles of good nutrition haven't changed all that much since you learned about them back in sixth grade. And a healthy pregnancy diet looks pretty much like a healthy non-pregnancy diet. Eat plenty of fruits and veggies, whole grains and lean protein, limit fats and salt, and drink a lot of water. There are a few differences, though. Now that your partner is pregnant, she'll need more calcium, folate, iron, and protein. We'll talk about this in more detail in a few minutes. Overall, after the first trimester, she should get about 300 more calories a day than before, more if she's carrying twins or better. Of course, if she was underweight before the pregnancy or is pregnant with multiples, she might need even more than that. Defer to her doctor on this one. If she was overweight before getting pregnant, this is not the time to go on a diet. At the same time, the fact that she's supposedly eating for two is not a license to wolf down anything she wants. In fact, a growing body of solid research is finding that what a woman eats while she's pregnant can directly and permanently affect the baby's long-term health and risk of developing diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and other diseases. Her practitioner will undoubtedly suggest a diet for her to follow, but here are a few nutritional basics to keep in mind. Let's start with calcium, which is critical to the manufacture of the baby's bones. And because so much of your partner's calcium intake goes directly to the baby, she needs to make sure there's enough left over for herself. And that would be 1,200 to 1,500 milligrams per day. If not, the growing fetus will leach it from your partner's bones, potentially increasing her risk of developing osteoporosis later in life. The best sources of calcium are milk and other dairy products, but if your partner is allergic to milk or is lactose intolerant, that's a condition that affects as many as 50 million Americans, many doctors will advise her to stay away from it, especially if she's planning to breastfeed, because her milk allergy could be passed to the baby. Good alternate sources of calcium include pink salmon, canned with soft bones is okay, tofu, broccoli, calcium-fortified orange juice, eggs, and oyster shell calcium tablets. Folate, or folic acid, is a B vitamin that plays an important role in preventing neural tube defects, which are major defects of the brain and or spine. These happen in the first few weeks of pregnancy, often before a woman knows she's pregnant. Since about half of all pregnancies are unplanned, experts recommend that every woman of childbearing age take a folate supplement just in case. Your partner should get around 600 micrograms per day during the pregnancy. Some docs are going to bump that up to 800 for the first trimester. Folate is so important that many grain products, including some flours, pastas, and cereals, are fortified with it. Additional good sources of folate include asparagus, avocados, bananas, beans, beets, broccoli, citrus fruits, dark green veggies, eggs, lentils, seeds and nuts, and yogurt. Iron. Your pregnant partner needs 27 milligrams of iron per day, nearly twice as much as before. If she doesn't get enough, she may become anemic and begin to feel exhausted. She should try to get 3 servings of iron-rich foods per day. Spinach, dried fruits, lean beef or poultry, fortified cereals, and legumes are all good sources, but since a lot of your partner's iron intake is being used to manufacture the fetus's blood, she may need more than she can possibly get from food alone. If so, her doctor will prescribe some over-the-counter supplements, but probably not until sometime after the third month. If possible, your partner should take the tablets with a glass of orange juice. It, along with other sources of vitamin C, will help her body absorb the iron. One warning, iron supplements frequently cause constipation. Protein. The average woman needs 45 grams of protein a day, but your pregnant partner should take in about 70 per day. If she's pregnant with twins, she'll need to up her protein intake by another 20 to 25 grams a day, but not until she's in the fourth or fifth month. When the fetus is 8 weeks old, it has about 125,000 brain cell neurons. But then, production goes into hyperdrive, 1,000 new neurons every second. So by the end of the 19th week, there are more than 25 billion, the most your child will ever have. Many nutritionists believe that a high-protein diet, especially during the first 19 weeks of pregnancy, supports this surge in brain cell growth in the baby. Fortunately, most women already eat plenty of protein, so your partner won't need any encouragement to eat more. But if you feel you need to be involved, lean proteins are always the best bet. Low-fat milk is one of the easiest sources of protein. One glass has about 8 grams. Drinking milk may have other benefits as well. Fariba Mirzai of the Harvard School of Public Health found that daughters of mothers who drank 4 glasses of milk per day while pregnant were 56% less likely to develop multiple sclerosis than daughters of women who drank less than 3 glasses per month. Other researchers have found a positive connection between an expectant mother's milk drinking and her child's height, milk makes them taller, and IQ, makes them smarter too. If your partner can't drink milk, high doses of vitamin D produced similar results. But check with her practitioner before she takes any supplements. Other good sources are skinless chicken, lean meats, low-fat cheese, tofu, peanut butter, and cooked fish. Eggs, cooked, not raw, are another excellent choice. Hard-boiled, they travel well, and they make a handy between-meal snack. Fruits and veggies. Eat a rainbow. Well, not really, but your partner, and you for that matter, should try to eat fruits and vegetables in as wide a variety of colors as you can. Besides helping form red blood cells, green and yellow vegetables, which strangely enough include cantaloupe and mango, are excellent sources of iron and vitamins A and B, which will help your partner's body absorb all that extra protein she'll be eating. Vitamin A may also prevent bladder and kidney infections. In addition, these vegetables are an excellent source of folic acid, which we discussed before. The darker the green, the better it is for your partner. The more colorful, the better rule holds true for fruits as well. Fruits are bursting with all sorts of vitamins and minerals, including antioxidants, which can protect against a variety of diseases and illnesses. Vitamin C is critical to the body's manufacture of collagen, the stuff that holds tissue together. It also helps ensure the baby's bone and tooth development. Vitamin D is involved in an amazing number of body functions, and not getting enough of it can cause all sorts of problems, including increasing the likelihood that your partner will give birth early, have a C-section, develop gestational diabetes or preeclampsia, again, a very dangerous high blood pressure-related condition, or give birth to a baby with skeletal problems. One of the best sources of vitamin D is sunlight, but talk to her OB about whether she needs a supplement. Overall, your partner should have a total of at least 7 servings a day of fruits and vegetables. Carbs. Grains, including breads and cereals, are basically fuel for your partner's body, and she should have at least 4 servings a day. Since her body will burn the fuel first, if she doesn't get enough, there may not be enough for the baby. Grains are generally low in calories and high in zinc, selenium, chromium, and magnesium, all essential nutrients. They're also high in fiber, which will help your partner combat the constipating effect of iron supplements. Good sources include whole grain breads. Keep her away from white bread and white rice for a few months if you can. Brown rice, fresh potatoes, peas, dried beans, and quinoa. Water. As if she doesn't have enough to do already, your partner should try to drink at least 8 8-ounce glasses of water or unsweetened, non-caffeinated fluids every day. More if she's doing a lot of exercise or if she's pregnant during the summer. This will help her replace the water she loses when she perspires, which she'll do a lot of during pregnancy, and to carry away waste products. Keep in mind that at any given moment, about half of the population is walking around somewhat dehydrated, which puts them at increased risk of developing a variety of problems, including kidney stones and urinary tract cancers. Fatty foods. Despite all the hype about low or no-fat diets, the fact is that your partner, like everyone else in the world, needs to consume at least some fat. She'll probably be getting most of what she needs in the other things she's eating during the day, but no more than 30% of her total caloric intake should come from fat. A diet too rich in fatty foods isn't good for her or your growing baby-to-be. Monounsaturated fats, avocado, peanuts, almonds, olive oil, canola oil, are best, followed by polyunsaturated fats like margarine, mayonnaise, and walnuts. The worst kinds are saturated fats, bacon, lard, butter, and of course trans fats, which is basically anything that has the words partially hydrogenated or hydrogenated on the ingredient panel. The Hunger Campaign. One of the things I constantly underestimated while my wife was pregnant was how incredibly hungry she would get and how quickly it would happen. Even though she might have had a snack before leaving the office, by the time she got home, she'd be ravenous again. If you've been doing most of the cooking at your house, things probably won't change much during the pregnancy. But if your partner has been making meals, there are a few things you can do to significantly simplify her life. First, learn to cook simple, quick meals. There are plenty of cookbooks specializing in meals that can be made in less than 30 minutes, or 20, or 10 even. Easier yet, there are quite a few blogs and websites that can help. I like realfoodbydad.com, stayatstovedad.com, cookingfordads.net, and dadcooksdinner.com. You can also stock up on healthy microwavable dinners or order takeout meals, but that can get expensive pretty fast. Do some meal planning. This means you'll have to spend some time reading cookbooks or surfing websites looking for the things that sound good. As you're reading, be sure to write down the ingredients you'll need. Although meal planning doesn't sound all that difficult, it's time-consuming, especially when you add in all the extra time you'll have to spend at the grocery store. Do the shopping. Even if your partner still plans the meals and makes out the shopping list, your going to the store will spare her an hour or so a week of walking around on floors that are tough even on non-pregnant people's feet. In addition, many women who have severe morning sickness find that being in a grocery store surrounded by so much food is just too much to stomach. If your partner did the shopping before the pregnancy, ask her to make a detailed list of the items she usually bought. Make her a nutritious breakfast shake. Let her spend a few more precious minutes relaxing in bed in the morning. Keep some snacks in the glove compartment when you're out together. Her energy can crash at any time, and a handful of nuts, some raisins, or a granola bar can really help. We've got some great recipes and a list of food items you might want to stock up on in the PDF that accompanies this audiobook. Reading the small print. Getting healthy food isn't always as easy as it might seem, and even though labeling requirements are getting more stringent, most food manufacturers aren't about to do you any favors. So as you're pushing your cart around the store, be sure to read the labels carefully. In particular, watch out for the following. The first ingredient on the list is always the one there's the most of, no matter what you're buying. So if that healthy ingredient splashed all over the front of the box, usually something like oat bran, turns out to be at the bottom of the list, move on to something else. Watch out for fructose, corn syrup, corn sweeteners, sucrose, dextrose, cane syrup, malt syrup, honey, and a lot of others. They're just fancy ways of saying sugar. Despite the healthy-looking label, most juices that contain the words drink, flavored, or cocktail contain less actual juice than you might guess, often as little as 10%, with the rest usually water and, wait for it, sugar. Servings. This is one of the most potentially deceptive areas in food labeling. In most cases, the number of calories, grams of fat and protein, and other nutritional information is given per serving. That's all very nice, except that manufacturers don't all use the same serving size. For example, I recently saw an 8-ounce package of fairly healthy frozen lasagna. The calories, protein, and fat all seemed okay until I noticed that the serving size was actually only 6 ounces. That means that since one person would eat the entire 8 ounces, well, I would anyway, there was really 33% more fat and calories than expected. Speaking of fat and calories, watch out for the line that says percentage of calories from fat. Most nutritionists agree that pregnant women should limit their percentage of calories from fat to about 30. Manufacturers are now required by law to make this calculation for you, so read the label carefully. A word about additives. When it comes to ingredients, my rule of thumb has always been that if you can't pronounce it, don't eat it. In addition, even some easy-to-pronounce items don't belong in your partner's stomach. So while she's pregnant, keep her away from artificial sweeteners, aspartame, Splenda, saccharin, Truvia, and others, nitrates and nitrites, preservatives that are commonly found in lunch meats, hot dogs, and bacon, and monosodium glutamate, MSG, a flavor enhancer especially popular in Asian food and, for some odd reason, in gefilte fish. All of these may have negative effects on your unborn child. Nutritional and chemical no-nos. Here's the deal. Generally speaking, if your partner eats it, drinks it, breathes it, or smells it, so does your growing baby. One of the worst offenders is cigarettes. When the mother-to-be inhales cigarette smoke, her womb fills with carbon monoxide, nicotine, tar, and resins that inhibit oxygen and nutrient delivery to the baby. Maternal cigarette smoking increases the risk of low birth weight babies and miscarriage. There's also some evidence that paternal smoking, exposing your partner and your baby to secondhand smoke, is just as bad. If you think the baby is somehow protected from your smoke by being inside your partner, or if you think that smoking doesn't matter this early in the pregnancy, you're dangerously wrong. Bottom line, if you're a smoker, quit now. If she is, encourage her to quit and help her any way you can. Interestingly, a lot of men put off quitting or asking their partners to quit out of fear that withdrawal might lead to some marital tension. Bad choice. The potential danger to your baby far outweighs the danger to your relationship. Oh, and if you're considering e-cigarettes or vaping, think again. While they're less toxic than tobacco cigarettes and they cut down on secondhand smoke, they're hardly safe. Most e-cigs use liquid nicotine, which, besides being addictive, can cause high blood pressure and other heart-related issues in your wife and can reduce blood flow to the placenta, potentially doing permanent damage to your baby. E-cigs may also contain propylene glycol, which, when heated, can turn into a powerful carcinogen. They also produce nanoparticles, which can irritate the lungs and aggravate asthma and other lung issues. Here's a great example of what happens when people get something only half right. Remember what I said about smoking causing low birth weight babies? Well, in Great Britain, smoking during pregnancy, especially among teen girls, is disturbingly common. These young girls somehow got the idea into their head that having a smaller baby would make labor and delivery less painful. What they didn't understand was that low birth weight is only the beginning. Smoking also increases the odds of miscarriage, birth defect, stillbirth, and premature birth. Babies born too soon have a higher risk of all sorts of problems later in life, respiratory illness, cerebral palsy, mental retardation, and heart problems, just to name a few. And they often go through nicotine withdrawal right after birth, just like crack babies. It also affects the mom by increasing her risk of developing placenta previa, which is when the placenta covers the opening to the uterus, placental abruption, which is where the placenta actually separates from the wall of the uterus before delivery, as well as of going into labor prematurely. Am I scaring you? I sure as hell hope so. Alcohol. Complete abstinence is the safest choice, although your partner's practitioner may sanction a glass of wine once in a while to induce relaxation. Regular, high-dose alcohol consumption can cause fetal alcohol syndrome, which is a set of irreversible mental and physical impairments and abnormalities. Even moderate social drinking has been linked to low birth weight babies, learning impairments, and miscarriages in the early stages of pregnancy. If you have a glass of Chardonnay here and there, you do so at your own risk, says Lissa Rankin. It's probably just fine to enjoy the occasional glass of wine. There's a big difference between being reckless a definite no-no, and having one drink at dinner. But there's just no data to help us make safe recommendations. If you're worried about any drinking your partner may have done before you found out you were pregnant, talk to her practitioner about it. Fasting. Unless she has a doctor's approval, your partner should never, ever go 24 hours without eating. This is especially important in the first 19 weeks of pregnancy when the baby's brain is developing. Over-the-counter or prescription drugs. Your partner should talk with her doctor before taking any medication, including aspirin, ibuprofen, and cold medicines, especially anything that contains alcohol or codeine. Antidepressants in particular have come under a lot of scrutiny lately. Several recent studies have linked one class of antidepressants, SSRIs, which include Prozac, Zoloft, Celexa, and Paxil, with increased risk of several fetal abnormalities. Others haven't found any connection, but as you might expect, untreated depression can cause plenty of problems too. So if your partner has struggled with depression, talk to her doctor about whether the risks of taking antidepressants are outweighed by the risks of not taking them. Caffeine. Avoiding an excessive amount of caffeine is especially important in the early months. Some studies have shown that pregnant women who drink more than 3 or 4 good-sized cups of coffee per day have a greater risk of having a miscarriage, delivering prematurely, or having a low birth weight baby than women who can walk by a Starbucks and keep their wallet in their purse. Most studies seem to indicate that a cup or two a day is okay, but check with her practitioner to get the final word. Recreational drugs. Abstain during pregnancy. Unborn children can be born addicted. There are a number of other things your partner should stay away from during the pregnancy. Raw meats and fish may contain Toxoplasma gondii, which can blind the fetus or damage its nervous system. Unpasteurized milk and soft cheeses such as brie may contain Listeria, another dangerous bacterium, and raw eggs and chicken may contain Salmonella. Practitioners do disagree, however, on the magnitude of the risk involved. My wife's first OBGYN was Japanese and had absolutely no problem with her eating sushi. Some fish you do need to watch out for, though. The FDA recommends that pregnant women stay away from shark, swordfish, mackerel, and tilefish, all of which contain high levels of mercury. Limit albacore tuna to a serving or two per week. If she wants fish or seafood, salmon, pollock, and shrimp are low-mercury choices. Cat feces. Okay, cat feces don't have much to do with nutrition, but they do contain high quantities of the same parasite found in some raw meats. So, if you have a cat and you want to be chivalrous, take over the duty of cleaning the litter box for the duration of the pregnancy. Actually, litter boxes don't pose much of a problem for most women. She's got a much better chance of coming into contact with cat poop when she's outside digging in the garden, which in many cats' view is nothing more than a giant litter box anyway. Insecticides, weed killers, and other chemicals. As long as you're taking over the gardening, put on your gloves and take a load of chemical fertilizer and pesticides to the nearest toxic waste disposal place. Your regular trash company won't take it if they know it's there. Prolonged and repeated exposure to those toxic substances has been linked to birth defects. If you really need pesticides and fertilizers, now is the time to switch to organics. Also, keep your partner far away from other potential chemical contaminants such as diazinon, which is a common cockroach killer, as well as no pest strips, flea sprays, and collars and pesticide bombs. Two chemicals in particular, PCBs and DDE, can have some very negative effects. Kids exposed to those chemicals in utero tend to be taller and weigh more than teens who weren't exposed, and they often enter puberty too early. Hair dyes. Long-term use of hair dyes by adults has been linked to increased risk of several types of cancer. But could hair dye be absorbed through a pregnant woman's scalp, enter her bloodstream, and harm her unborn baby? The jury's out on that one. The American Pregnancy Association says that hair dyes and other chemical-intensive products are fine during pregnancy. After all, your partner isn't planning to drink the stuff. She's putting it in her hair, right? Other experts in reproductive health, including Joanne Perrone, point to research that indicates that using hair dye may affect a growing fetus on the cellular level and could increase a child's risk of developmental and reproductive disorders. May. Could. Big words. But why take the risk? The easiest solution is for your partner to avoid dyeing her hair while she's pregnant, at the very least during the first 3 months when the baby's organs and nervous system are forming. If you can't convince her that her hair looks wonderful just the way it is, Google non-toxic hair dye. Going organic. Grocery store shelves are filled with organic everything, but how much of this craze is hype? Just another excuse to raise prices. Well, there's no way to give you an exact statistic, but it seems to make sense that we should try to minimize the amount of pesticides, hormones, antibiotics, and other nasty-sounding gunk that shows up in our food. The Environmental Working Group at EWG.org has a complete list of the produce items that you and your partner might want to avoid, as well as the ones that pose little or no danger, meaning there's no sense paying extra for organic. Generally speaking, foods with peels you don't eat are okay, and the harder the peel, the better. There are way too many foods to include here, so I want to give you a dozen or so of the best and the worst. Here are the ones you don't need to buy organic. Avocado, sweet corn, pineapple, cabbage, onions, sweet peas, asparagus, mango, papaya, kiwi, eggplant, and cantaloupe. And here are the ones that you probably should buy organic. If you can't stay away from the ones on this list, at least wash them very, very carefully. Apples, strawberries, grapes, celery, peaches, spinach, bell peppers, nectarines, cucumbers, cherry tomatoes, snap peas, and potatoes. A quick word about a vegetarian diet. If your partner is a vegetarian, there's no reason why she and the baby can't get the nutrition they need, especially if she eats eggs and milk. But if she's a strict vegan, she'll need to be especially sure that she's getting enough protein and other nutrients. Check with her doctor or a good nutritionist for special guidance on that one. A final thought on nutrition. Helping your partner eat right is one of the best things you can do to ensure that you'll have a healthy, happy baby and a healthy, happy partner. But don't be too hard on her. Being pregnant is tough enough without having someone standing over her shoulder criticizing every choice she makes. While she'd undoubtedly be better off eating nothing but healthy foods all the time, an occasional order of fries or a candy bar isn't going to do any long-term damage. In fact, there's some evidence that eating dark chocolate may actually be good for her. Several studies have found a correlation between dark chocolate and reduced heart attack risk, better weight management, and stress relief. In one study, pregnant women who had 5 or more servings of chocolate every week in the third trimester were 40% less likely to develop preeclampsia. Finally, be supportive. This means that you should try to eat as healthily as she does. If you absolutely must have a banana split and you're not planning to share, do it on your own time. And don't brag about it. A special note for adoptive and ART dads. If you're one of the many expectant adoptive parents who has met your future baby's birth mother or you've hired a surrogate, do whatever you can to support her pregnancy without being annoying. Encourage her to exercise, stop smoking, eat right, take her prenatal vitamins, go to her regularly scheduled medical appointments, and so on. As hard as it is to believe, you've made it through the first month. Now that you've got a good handle on diet and nutrition, let's move on to the second month. The second month. The doctor will see you now. What's going on with the baby? During this month, the baby will officially change from an embryo to a fetus. By the end of the month, he or she, it's way too early to tell which one by looking, will be about the size of an almond and will have stubby little arms with wrists but no fingers yet, sealed shut eyes on the side of the face, ears, and a tiny beating heart on the outside of the body. If you bumped into a 6-foot-tall version of your baby in a dark alley, you'd run the other way. What's going on with your partner? Physically, she's still feeling pretty fatigued. And her morning sickness, if she had it at all, is still going on. She's urinating more frequently, but not as much as she will be in a couple months. Her fingers may be tingly, breasts are tender, and nipples are getting darker. Emotionally, she continues to be elated and at the same time maybe a little ambivalent about being pregnant. It's getting harder for her to keep her mind on her work. She's afraid you won't find her attractive anymore. She's moody, and she may be afraid of an early miscarriage, especially if you used ART. What's going on with you? The struggle to connect. Just about every study that's ever been done on the subject has shown that women generally connect with their pregnancy sooner than men do. Although they can't feel the baby kicking inside them yet, the physical changes they're experiencing make the pregnancy more real for them. For most men, however, pregnancy at 2 months is still a pretty abstract concept. For me, as excited as I was, the idea that we were really expecting was so hard to grasp that I actually forgot about it for days at a time. Excitement versus fear. But when I remembered we were about to become parents, I found myself in the midst of a real conflict, one that would plague me for months. On the one hand, I was still so elated that I could barely contain myself. I had visions of walking with my child on the beach, playing catch, reading, helping him or her with homework, and I wanted to stop strangers on the street and tell them I was going to be a father. On the other hand, I made a conscious effort to stifle my fantasies and excitement and to keep myself from getting attached to the idea. That way, if we had a miscarriage or something else went wrong, I wouldn't be devastated. Dads who have been through a miscarriage on a previous pregnancy or done several unsuccessful IVF or assisted technology cycles are especially susceptible to this kind of self-protective and completely understandable denial. Increased or decreased sexual desire. It was during the times when I let myself get excited about becoming a father that I noticed that my wife's and my sex life was changing. Perhaps it was because I was still reveling in the recent confirmation of my masculinity, or perhaps it was because I felt a newer, closer connection to my wife. It may even have been the sense of freedom resulting from not having to worry about birth control. Whatever the reason, sex in the early months of the pregnancy became wilder and more passionate than ever before. But not all men experience an increase in sexual desire during pregnancy. Some are turned off by their partner's changing figure. Others are afraid of hurting the baby, which is nearly impossible at this stage of the game. Still others may feel that there's no sense in having sex now that they're pregnant. Whatever your feelings about sex or anything else for that matter, try to talk them over with your partner. Chances are she's experiencing or soon will be very similar feelings. One thing you may not want to discuss with your partner is your dreams. According to Alan Siegel, a psychologist in Berkeley, California, where else, a lot of expectant dads experience an increase in dreams about having sex with their partner, old girlfriends, and even prostitutes. For some guys, these dreams are an expression of their concern that the pregnancy will mess with their sex life. The brain is probably saying to itself, well, big guy, if you can't get any in the flesh, you can still have some pretty wild fantasies. For other guys, sexual dreams are a way of reassuring themselves that fatherhood and all those mushy, protective feelings that go with it in no way detracts from their masculinity. Looking for validation. If you're adopting, the time between your decision to adopt and the actual arrival of your child could be considered a psychological pregnancy. Unlike a biological pregnancy, you won't, in most cases, know exactly how long it's going to take from beginning to end. But what's interesting is that most expectant adoptive parents go through an emotional progression similar to that of expectant biological parents. That's according to adoption educator Carol Hallenbeck. The first step is what Hallenbeck calls adoption validation, which basically means coming to terms with the idea that you're going to be a parent through adoption instead of through normal means. During their psychological pregnancy, adoptive parents often experience the same kind of denial that I described earlier. Not letting themselves get too excited out of fear that the adoption could take far longer than they expected or that it'll fall apart completely. If you and your partner have hired a surrogate, there's a good chance that you'll be going through a psychological pregnancy as well. Unlike an adoptive couple, you have a much better idea of when your baby will be born, but you may still go through what might be called surrogacy validation. This may seem straightforward, but it's usually not. For many parents, according to researcher Rachel Levy Schiff, adoption or surrogacy is a second choice. a decision reached only after years of unsuccessfully trying to conceive on their own and after seemingly endless disappointments and intrusive, expensive medical procedures. Infertility can make you question your self-image and undermine your sense of masculinity. How can I be a man if I can't get my partner pregnant? It can also force you to confront your shattered dreams and can take a terrible toll on your relationship. If you're having trouble accepting the fact that you won't be having a biologically related child, I urge you to talk to some other people about what you're feeling. Your partner certainly has a right to know, and she might be feeling a lot of similar things. In addition, the adoption agency you're working with will probably have a list of support resources for adoptive fathers. Give them a try. Staying involved. Going to the OBGYN appointments. The general rule that women connect with the pregnancy sooner than men has an exception. Men who get involved early on and stay involved until the end have been shown to be as connected with their baby as their partners. At this stage, the best way to get involved is to go to as many of your partner's OBGYN appointments as possible. Although I always love being told that I am healthy as a horse, I never really looked forward to going to the doctor. And going to someone else's doctor is even less attractive. But over the course of 3 pregnancies, I think I missed only 2 OB medical appointments. Admittedly, some of the time I was bored out of my mind, but overall it was a great opportunity to have my questions answered and to satisfy my curiosity about just what was going on inside my wife's womb. There's no doubt that you can get at least some basic questions answered by reading a couple of the hundreds of pregnancy and childbirth books written for women. But there are a number of other more important reasons to go to the appointments. To start with, you'll become more of a participant in the pregnancy and less of a spectator. In other words, it will help make the pregnancy yours. Going to the OB appointments will demystify the process and make it more tangible. Hearing the baby's heartbeat for the first time in about the 3rd month and seeing his or her tiny body squirm on an ultrasound screen, that happens in about the 5th month, brings home the reality of the pregnancy in a way that words on a page just can't do. As the pregnancy progresses, your partner is going to be feeling more and more dependent on you, and she'll need more signs that you'll always be there for her. While going to her doctor appointments may not seem quite as romantic as a moonlit cruise or a dozen roses, there are very few better ways to remind her that you love her and to reassure her that she's not in this thing alone. The more you're around, the more seriously the doctor and the rest of the staff will take you, and the more involved they'll let you be. If you're planning to go to your partner's checkups, you better get your calendar out. If you're expecting one baby, the typical schedule is monthly in months 1 through 6, every other week in months 7 and 8, weekly for the last month. If you're expecting multiples, the schedule is the same for the first 5 months. In months 6 and 7, you go to every other week, and starting in month 8, you'll go every week. Of course, taking time off from work for all these appointments may not be realistic. But before you write the whole thing off, check with the doctor. Some may offer early morning or evening appointments. Screening and testing. Besides being a time of great emotional closeness between you and your partner, pregnancy is also a time for your partner to be poked and prodded. Most of the tests you'll have to take, such as the monthly urine tests for blood sugar and the quarterly blood tests for other problems, are purely routine. Others, though, are less routine and sometimes can be scary. The scariest of all are the ones to detect birth defects, most commonly Down syndrome and other chromosomal abnormalities. One of the things you can expect your partner's doctor to do is take a detailed medical history from both of you. These medical histories will help the practitioner assess your risk of having a child with severe or not so severe problems. If you're in one of the high-risk categories, your doctor may suggest some additional prenatal screening. The words screening and testing are often used interchangeably, but there's actually a big difference between them. Non-invasive procedures, such as ultrasounds and blood tests, are used to assess potential risk factors. If the risk is high enough, the doctor may order a test to confirm the diagnosis. Those tests are usually invasive to your partner and the baby, and they involve some risk. The OB will be able to help you decide whether the benefits of taking the test, that would be knowing whether your baby is healthy, outweigh the potential risks, which would be the possibility that they might cause a miscarriage. Your partner or you might want to consider genetic testing if any of the following are true. One of you has a family history of birth defects, or you know you're a carrier for a genetic disorder such as cystic fibrosis, muscular dystrophy, or hemophilia. One of you is a member of a high-risk ethnic group, such as African Americans, Native Americans, Jews of Eastern European descent, Greeks, Italians, and others. Your partner is 35 or older. Your partner has had several miscarriages. She's had a positive triple or quad or penta screen, and we'll talk more about those in just a minute. One of you might be a carrier of specific genes that have been linked with birth defects. Prenatal testing is also available to people who, while not considered a risk, have other reasons for wanting it done. Some of the most common reasons include finding out the sex of the baby, or in some cases to determine who the biological father is. And also peace of mind. Having an amniocentesis or a chorionic villi sampling, a CVS, test can remove most doubts about the chromosomal health of your child. For some people, this reassurance can make the pregnancy a much more enjoyable and less stressful experience. If the tests do reveal problems, you and your partner will have more time to prepare yourselves for the tough decisions ahead, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. If you did ART and pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, which is PGD, you and your partner may not have to be tested at all. The lab would have been able to test the embryo itself for more than 100 diseases and abnormalities. If any were found, that particular embryo wouldn't have been implanted. However, because there's a small risk of getting a false negative on PGD, many fertility doctors will recommend additional testing once the pregnancy is underway. Non-invasive procedures. Let's start with ultrasounds or sonograms, which are painless to the mother, safe for the baby, and can be performed anytime after the fifth week of pregnancy. By bouncing sound waves around the uterus and off the fetus, ultrasounds produce a picture of the baby and the placenta. To the untrained eye, standard 2D images look remarkably like Mr. Potato Head without the glasses and mustache. 3D ultrasounds generate a more complete image of the fetus, and 4D ultrasounds, sometimes also called dynamic 3D, actually let you see your future baby in action, sucking his thumb, napping, swimming, and doing whatever else fetuses do to keep busy. In the first trimester, your doctor will probably recommend an ultrasound only if there's something going on that's a little out of the ordinary. The most common reason is that the size of the uterus doesn't correspond to the age of the fetus when measured from your partner's last period. The doc may also order an ultrasound if your partner has experienced any bleeding, there's any doubt as to the number of fetuses, or if he or she suspects an ectopic pregnancy. That's a pregnancy that takes place outside the uterus. At this stage, the ultrasound can confirm that there's a heartbeat and can measure the baby, starting with the charmingly named crown rump length, which will give you a better due date estimate. Depending on your partner's risk, her doctor may offer or recommend a nuchal translucency ultrasound, also called an NT scan, which is a special type of ultrasound that measures fluid in the nuchal fold, a spot at the base of your baby's head. Excess fluid in that area is often associated with chromosomal abnormalities and some heart conditions. The test needs to be done between 11 and 14 weeks and is usually part of what's called the combined first trimester screening, which includes a blood test measuring your partner's levels of pregnancy-associated plasma protein A, PAP-A, and a hormone called HCG. The combined test is about 85% accurate and has a false positive rate of 5%. There's also an integrated screening, which uses the results of the combined screening and adds in the quad test that I'll describe in a minute, which is done between 15 and 20 weeks. Taken together, this increases the detection rate and reduces the false positive rate to about 1%. Second trimester ultrasounds are usually the ones that low-risk couples see first. They're used to determine the sex of the baby, this one of course is optional, to get a more accurate estimate of the due date, or just because you're curious about what the baby looks like. If this is the first ultrasound, your practitioner will want to confirm the number of residents in the uterus, see how well they're moving around, and make sure all the body parts and organs are the right size and in the right place. The test may also be used to firm up the due date and to confirm anything that may have come up in other prenatal tests, including the triple or quad screen, amniocentesis, and CVS. During the last part of the pregnancy, and especially if the baby is overdue, your partner's doctor may order additional ultrasounds to determine the baby's position, to make sure the placenta is still functioning, or to confirm that there's still enough amniotic fluid left to support the baby. Triple or quadruple screens. The triple screen measures three chemicals that may show up in your partner's blood: AFP, alpha fetal protein, HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin, and estriol. The quad adds one more substance, inhibin A, to the screen, and there's actually a penta, which includes yet another substance called invasive trophoblast antigen, or ITA. Together, they're used to flag potential abdominal wall abnormalities and a variety of neural tube defects. Remember, those are the defects relating to the brain or spinal column, the most common of which are spina bifida and anencephaly, which is a completely or partially missing brain. Whether you have the triple, the quad, or the penta — is this kind of sounding like Olympic gymnastics judging, or is it just me? — will depend on what your doctor orders. Theoretically, the more things you test for, the lower the false positive rate. These simple blood tests are conducted when your partner is 15 to 20 weeks pregnant, and the results are usually available within a week, sometimes even the next day. It's important to understand that a positive result is not necessarily an indication of the presence of an abnormality, just that there might be a problem. Most turn out to be perfectly fine, but if your partner does get a positive result, she'll be asked to take additional tests, such as an ultrasound or amniocentesis, which should clear up any doubts. Since these screens are really designed to let your partner know whether she needs additional testing, she may not want to bother if she's already planning to have an amnio or an in-depth ultrasound test later. Tests you may have to take. No, you're not pregnant, but there are still a few times when you may need to give a little blood to make sure all's well with your baby. A variety of genetically transmitted birth defects, for example, affect some ethnic groups more than others, so based on your family histories, your partner's doctor may order one or both of you to get additional blood tests. OB Saul Weinreb told me that every person in the world is estimated to carry thousands of potentially harmful genetic mutations, which means that every couple has an approximately equal chance of having a baby with a random genetic disorder that they had no idea they carried. The good news is that science has been able to identify certain diseases that occur more commonly in certain ethnic groups. So, rather than think of these groups as somehow genetically worse off than others, think of them as being lucky that there are tests for conditions that may affect them. New tests are being developed every day. Among the most commonly identifiable conditions are sickle cell anemia. If you're African American or your family came from the Caribbean, Italy, Sardinia, or India, you may want to be tested, whether your practitioner suggests it or not. If your partner knows she's negative, though, ask the doctor whether you should bother. Tay-Sachs and Canavan disease. If either you or your partner is of Ashkenazi, Eastern European, descent, get tested. Tay-Sachs is also found in some non-Jewish French Canadians. Interestingly, once your partner is pregnant, it's more accurate to test you for these conditions than to test her. If your results come back positive, she'll need to be tested, though. Cystic fibrosis. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists now recommends that OBs offer cystic fibrosis testing routinely. Thalassemia affects mainly families of Asian, Southeast Asian, African, Middle Eastern, Greek, or Italian origins. You may also have to be tested if your partner has a negative Rh factor, which stands for rhesus, just like the monkey, in her blood. If you're positive, and most of us are, your baby might be positive as well. If this is the case, your partner's immune system might think the Rh-positive baby is some kind of intruder and try to fight it. This can lead to fetal brain damage or even death. Fortunately, this problem is preventable. Your partner will have to get some anti-Rh injections starting about the 28th week of pregnancy. Okay, we've gone over the non-invasive procedures. Now, let's talk about the invasive ones, starting with amniocentesis. This extremely accurate test is usually performed at 15 to 18 weeks and can identify nearly every possible chromosomal disorder, including Down syndrome. It can't, however, detect deformities such as cleft palate. If your baby is at risk of any other genetic conditions, your partner's doctor can order additional testing, but these tests are not done routinely. Amnio is also sometimes used in the third trimester of pregnancy to help doctors determine whether the fetus's lungs are mature enough to survive an emergency premature delivery, if they're worried about that. The test involves inserting a needle through the abdominal wall into the amniotic sac, where about an ounce of fluid is collected and analyzed. Results are usually available in 1 to 3 weeks. Unless your partner is considered high risk, her doctor will tell her if she is, or either of you needs to be reassured that your baby is healthy, there's no real reason to have this test. The chances that a 25-year-old woman will give birth to a baby with a defect that an amnio can detect are about 1 in 500. The chances that the procedure will cause a miscarriage, however, are 1 in 200. For women over 35, though, amnio begins to make statistical sense. The chances she'll have a baby with a chromosomal abnormality is roughly 1 in 190 and rises steadily as she ages. At 40, the risk is about 1 in 65. At 45, 1 in 20. Chorionic villi sampling, CVS. Generally, this test is performed at 9 to 12 weeks to detect chromosomal abnormalities and genetically inherited diseases. The test can be done by inserting a needle through the abdominal wall or by threading a catheter through the vagina and cervix into the uterus. Either way, small pieces of the chorion, a membrane with genetic makeup identical to that of the fetus, are snipped off or suctioned into a syringe and analyzed. The risks are about the same as for amnio, and the two tests can identify pretty much the same potential abnormalities. The main advantage to CVS is that it can be done a lot earlier in the pregnancy, giving you and your partner more time to consider the alternatives. That's why the number of amnios is falling while CVSs are rising. Percutaneous umbilical blood sampling, or PUBS. No, PUBS has nothing to do with bars, although you may need one after thinking about all this. The PUBS test is usually conducted at 17 to 36 weeks and is sometimes ordered to confirm possible genetic and blood disorders that have been detected through amnio or CVS. The procedure is virtually the same as an amnio, except that the needle is inserted into a blood vessel in the umbilical cord. Some practitioners believe this makes the test more accurate. Later in the pregnancy, PUBS may be used to determine whether the fetus has chickenpox, Toxoplasma gondii, or other dangerous infections. Preliminary results are available within about 3 days. In addition to the risk of complications or miscarriage resulting from the procedure, PUBS may also slightly increase the likelihood of premature labor or clotting of the umbilical cord, and because it can't be performed any earlier than 17 weeks, it's not nearly as popular as amnio or CVS. One of the most exciting developments in prenatal testing is cell-free fetal DNA testing, also called cfDNA or cffDNA. Which has the potential to eliminate the need for the vast majority of invasive diagnostics. Cell-free fetal DNA testing, which can be done as early as 10 weeks, analyzes tiny bits of the fetus's DNA that are running around in the mom to be's blood. According to Diana Bianchi, a pediatric geneticist at Tufts Medical Center, the results are 10 times more accurate in predicting Down syndrome and 5 times more accurate in predicting several other genetic conditions. The cffDNA test is nearly 100% accurate in ruling out problems, meaning that a negative result should relieve your anxieties. But it does produce some false positives, so a positive diagnosis would still need to be confirmed by amnio, CVS, or PUBS. Still, according to Bianchi, 9 out of 10 women who are currently being referred for further testing would not need invasive tests. The test is expensive. It isn't available everywhere, and it may not be covered by insurance, so if you're interested, check with your partner's doc. Dealing with the unexpected. For me, pregnancy was the proverbial emotional roller coaster ride. One minute I'd find myself wildly excited and dreaming about the new baby, and the next I was filled with feelings of impending doom. I knew I wanted our babies, but I also knew that if I got too emotionally attached and anything unexpected happened, like an ectopic pregnancy, a miscarriage, or a birth defect, I would be crushed. So instead of allowing myself to enjoy the pregnancy fully, I ended up spending a lot of time torturing myself by reading and worrying about the bad things that could happen. Let's talk about a few of them. Ectopic pregnancy. About 1 to 2% of all embryos don't embed in the uterus but begin to grow outside the womb, usually in the fallopian tube, which is unable to expand sufficiently to accommodate the growing fetus. Undiagnosed, an ectopic pregnancy would eventually cause the fallopian tube to burst, resulting in severe bleeding. Fortunately, the vast majority of ectopic pregnancies are caught and removed by the 8th week of pregnancy, long before they become dangerous. Unfortunately, there is no way to transplant the embryo from the fallopian tube into the uterus, so there's no choice but to terminate the pregnancy. As quickly as technology is advancing, though, I'm sure transplantation will be possible in the not-too-distant future. Preeclampsia. This is one of the most common pregnancy complications. About 10% of pregnant women, mostly between the ages of 18 and 30, suffer from it, although the highest risk groups are very young teens and women in their 40s. Preeclampsia is sometimes referred to as toxemia or PIH, protein-induced hypertension, because one of the symptoms is high protein levels in the urine. Basically, it's an increase in the mother's blood pressure late in the pregnancy. This can deprive the fetus of blood and other nutrients and put the mother at risk of having a stroke or a seizure. Women who have a history of high blood pressure or blood vessel abnormalities are especially prone, as are daughters of women who had preeclampsia when they were pregnant. And Norwegian researchers Rolf Skarven and Lars Vatten found that men born after a preeclampsia-complicated pregnancy had a moderately increased risk of fathering a preeclamptic pregnancy. But most of the time, it comes as an unpleasant surprise to everyone. In its early stages, there usually aren't any symptoms, but it can be detected by a routine blood pressure check. If the condition worsens, the woman may develop headaches, water retention, vomiting, pain in the abdomen, blurred vision, and seizures. Interestingly, researchers now suspect that preeclampsia is actually a disorder in which the mother's immune system rejects some of the father's genes that are in the fetus's cells. They suspect that women may be able to immunize themselves before getting pregnant if they build up a tolerance by exposing themselves to their partner's semen as often as possible. This explains why preeclampsia is far more common during first pregnancies, or at least the first pregnancy with a new partner. It also explains why fewer women over 30 develop the condition. Still, it can happen to older moms or those who have multiple children. There's no guaranteed way to prevent preeclampsia, but there are a few things that could reduce the risk. Staying well hydrated, cutting back on salt, and getting enough exercise may help your partner keep her blood pressure under control. So can increasing her fiber intake. One study found that women who ate over 25 grams of fiber every day cut their risk by 50%. And in one of the greatest pieces of good news for pregnant women, Elizabeth Trikey and her colleagues found that women who had 5 or more servings of chocolate each week in their third trimester were 40% less likely to develop preeclampsia than those who ate chocolate less than once a week. Apparently, there's a chemical in chocolate, theobromine, that dilates blood vessels and reduces blood pressure. But do you really think your partner needs an excuse to eat more chocolate? Miscarriages. The sad fact, especially for pessimists like me, is that miscarriages happen fairly frequently. Some experts estimate that between a fifth and a third of all pregnancies end in miscarriage, which is probably why they're sometimes also called spontaneous abortion. In fact, almost every sexually active woman not on birth control will have one at some point in her life. In most cases, the miscarriage occurs before the woman ever knows she's pregnant. Whatever there was of the tiny embryo is swept away with her regular menstrual flow. Before you start to panic, there are a few things to remember. First, over 90% of couples who experience a single miscarriage get pregnant and have a healthy baby later. Second, many people believe that miscarriages, most of which happen within the first 3 months of the pregnancy, are a kind of Darwinian natural selection. Some have